because he knows all the members.
There are some new faces.
There are some new faces. Oh, because of the new faces, they need to introduce themselves. So we'll start from my home girl. Tell us who you are, and then we'll go down.
Good morning to you. I'm Denise Robinson. I live in the Western Cape. I live in the Western Cape, but I originally from the Eastern Cape, which is why I'm the home dog to the checkers.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Magdalene Patricia Kobani. I'm from the Eastern Province, that is the most province, the most beautiful province in South Africa.
Very flash.
Very funny. My name is Maurice Sakhalin Fay. I'm from the Platinum Order.
Good morning, my name is Tanwe Kenya. I'm from the same Cape in Hotan Province in Sawa. Almost all of them. That is the Hua Tambo. Thank you.
Nzala, it's you.
Oh, thank you. I am Susan Jim from Texas.
Okay, there's nothing to say about KZN. Nzala, I think maybe I'm not sure, but I think there are people who are not members who are sitting closer to you. So if you could come to the other members and then they go a little bit down. I'm told that they are journalists. They want to know all the information that they're talking about. In fact, probably it's better to fire them so that we can talk without them. Okay. No, I'm joking. If you could just move a little bit down. Okay, Mango.
I'm Patrice Ngozi. Thank you.
Thank you. Those are the members of Parliament. I think we have to move further down. I'm sorry, it's not because we are. Okay, while you're sitting down, Dada Khanada, you introduce yourself. Just open that gadget, that Free State gadget.
I'm the
You should have said you are the homeboy too. Uped said it's a beautiful province. We are not sure whether it's beautiful or not.
That's why the
No, no, we're boosting the economy of that place. We saw that the economy has gone down, so we're boosting the economy. Okay. I think I need to apologize to the journalists. It's not because we don't like you. We like you. It's only that we wanted the members to be close to each other so that they can ask questions. So don't feel bad. I really apologize that we are pushing you down the line. We really like you. Yeah, we're not pushing you out of the house. We still need you in the house.
I'm Segi Pillay, the Chief Executive Officer for the National Health and Quality Service.
I'm Dave Iria, the Chief Financial Officer.
Ralph Mukichima, the Deputy Chair of the Administration.
Edric Baba, the Leading Manager for the Coastal Region.
Sibela Ndukbona, Mukora. Okay, welcome everybody. Seki, it's over to you.
If I may, the deputy chair would like to make a few introductory comments before I get into the formal presentation, if that's okay.
Thank you very much, Chair, to give us the opportunity to fulfill our statutory duty of informing Parliament of our plan of the nation. really would like, first of all, to apologize for our chairperson. Secondly, I just would like to note the fact that the last meeting that at least I was here and we directed, we had the opportunity of sharing this meeting with the health department of KZN, Southern and Eastern. And on that occasion, the problem was the crisis of provinces, non-payment of the NHS. Now, that problem, Chair, has not been answered. That problem is still with us, even though to a lesser extent. But usually this time of the year, going to the beginning of the financial year, we don't run into this problem. But this year, we are struggling with it, which is indicative of problems still to come. Now, in this plan, Chair, we are making, we're trying to sort out a number of the challenges. One of them being that of non-payment. And in this plan, we try and propose a model, a service delivery model that would be more affordable to the public. But also, Chair, the NHLS faces, as you know, a number of other challenges which would go into detail in the community. But in the main, it really is about making laboratory services accessible and the results accessible to our communities in the country. So without much ado, Chair, I will hand over to the
Thanks, Chair. Maybe that's why I thought you should be the Chair. I'm not looking at Dr. You have actually given us a good opening to mark, especially that the last time that we met you, there were some challenges. What makes one uncomfortable is that in South Africa we're not doing well in health. The indicators are showing us that things are not that good, but we know that there are health reforms that are going on in South Africa. But now if they're going to the laboratory services which are assisting the health professionals to be able to better the health indicators, and there are problems there, then it tells us that it's going to take us a longer period to reach the targets that the department wants to reach. So it is something that probably we need to look into in detail. Maybe in your presentation, CEO, you'll need to highlight those areas where there are problems, so that if there are things that we can do, we try to intervene last time, so that we could try and see what needs to be done as we're doing the oversight, so that we could make sure that we realize if the problem is still with you, because it tells us that obviously what has been the target of the department isn't going to contribute if the laboratory services are not going to be where they're supposed to be. Okay. Over to you. Thank you.
Honourable Chair, honourable members of the committee, thank you very much for this opportunity to present our strategic plan. Chair, the focus really today is the strategic plan, so we'll spend the bulk of our time talking about that. But I'll end on highlighting some of the current, what's been an update following our last meeting with respect to the cash flow situation that Dr. Nsima referred to a few minutes ago. But the focus is really around the 2012-2013 strategic plan. Honourable Chair and members, perhaps we can just start off with, I think many of you are familiar with our mission and vision, but I think just to remind ourselves what drives the five-year strategic plan, and in particular the 12-month operational plan for NHLS. The vision of NHLS is to be a leader in pathology, service, surveillance and academic health services. And our mission is to provide quality, affordable...
For those who probably have got good vision, is that picture very good?
We can maybe switch off the one...
Or don't we need to focus it somewhere? Does it need... Is it okay? Is it...
No, not really.
maybe let's switch off the light. It's still not good. It doesn't just need the focusing or something.
It's also
Is it because you don't have money to do a better one?
I think the technology is the problem.
I'm told the problem is Parliament. It's not you. Okay. I was worried about those who don't have the document. There are some people who don't have this document. So, but in any case, continue saying, we'll look at the document.
Okay. So, Chair, our mission is really to provide, as Dr. Ngidima has highlighted, to provide a high-quality, affordable, and the operative word is very affordable, a sustainable health laboratory services, and we included the issue around sustainability. Because, Chair, as you're already aware, NHLS must be recognized as core to the clinical service in relation to the impact of the patient journey. Diagnostic laboratory services is part and parcel of the patient journey. And I don't think in our country there still is a recognition of the central role that laboratory services play. As you're aware, any form of surveillance, any form of diagnosis, and 70 to 80% of patients who come into the public health system must, in order that we support a clinician, they must have some sort of diagnosis so that clinicians can intervene appropriately at a clinical level. And then we looked at the values of NHLS and we've identified six of them. The first talks to excellence and it talks to the issue around quality. The second is responsive, and it's really looking at whether or not we aligned ourselves fully behind the provincial departments of health, and in particular the hospitals and the clinics. The third is clearly the nature of our business requires an ethical approach. The fourth is around accountability, and accountability to, in addition to the patients and the public that we serve, but also to committees like yourself, Chair. The fifth value is around customer service and understanding the whole aspect around customer service, and the last is respect, particularly around the staff that work within the National Health Laboratory Service. Chair, developing the strategic plan, it's been informed by a couple of documents, and they're quite important documents. The first is the Maputo Declaration, that some of you may already be familiar with. The Maputo Declaration on Strengthening of Laboratory Health Systems, the WHO conference that took place in Maputo in 2008, and it's quite a landmark document, and we use that as a basis to inform the strategic plan, the annual performance plan. The second is a very important area now, Chair, the Moscow Declaration, and the new emphasis now on non-communicable diseases. We had a strong emphasis on communicable diseases, but South Africa is now faced with the same kind of diseases that first world countries are, and we need to start focusing as well on non-communicable diseases like diabetes, for instance. The third document that informed us is the government's program of action for 2009, and that's the human development cluster document that is available. The fourth is obviously our own plan, because the Chair, you'll recall 2 years ago we presented the 5-year strategic plan for the National Health Laboratory Service. Obviously, we went back and revisited that and looked at whether it's still relevant. The fourth is the annual report of last year. The fifth is the annual report, and we reviewed obviously what we set out to do last year, 2010-2011, and whether or not we achieved that, and how does that impact on our strategic plan. And the last is obviously the minister's national service level agreement that he's concluded with the president. So we've used those documents to inform the APP. Honorable Chair, with respect to process, the plan is aligned to our 5-year strategic plan. As I've indicated, we went back and revisited that. We're entering the third year of our 5-year plan. So we went back and we looked at the performance, what we've achieved over the last 2 years. We've done a quick evaluation of that in informing what would be happening over the next 3 years. The final plan was, or at least the plan was finalized in a 2-day workshop that involved the executives of NHLS and the full board of NHLS. This plan was then revised and amended based on the input that we got from the board.
and it was then presented to a formal board meeting and approved. Subsequently, Chair, the plan was submitted to the Honourable Minister for Health and approved at that level. So again, we presented the 10-point plan of NHLS, but it's really to remind committee members, because it's on the basis of this 10-point plan that the one-year activities have been developed. So the first is developing a new service delivery model that is more affordable for the public sector, and the Deputy Chair of NHLS has already highlighted this. All the work that we do is really looking at whether or not our current model is appropriate for the next 10 years of public health changes that are happening in South Africa at this point in time. So that's one of the of our 10 plans. The second is looking at developing a best fit service delivery model. The third is deliver quality customer focused service. The fourth is aligning our resources, support service and infrastructure development for service delivery behind the service delivery model. Then of course, laboratory services, as you know, Chair, is largely dependent on highly skilled laboratory medicine professionals, pathologists, technologists, technicians. So clearly, becoming an employer of choice for this category remains a very important priority for us. The sixth is around innovation and research. All the work that we do must be bedded in some form of evidence. And so looking at research is very important to us, but not just any type of research. It's really research that is translational, that responds to the challenges that face our country at this point from a disease profile perspective. So we've got a strong emphasis on research, but a second part of it is how do we take the research and translate it into any innovative intervention? Because research is useless if it's not going to be translated into some kind of response to a particular problem that we're facing on the ground. So that's the sixth priority. And then the seventh is really around the health information powerhouse. And Chair, if you recall in the previous presentation, we talked about the powerful databases that NHLS has at the moment, based on the tests that we do. And the kinds of information that we have at the moment will be able to give us an idea of what trends are emerging in the country. If there's a problem, where is that problem? For example, our colleagues on the Eastern Cape, for instance, if there are particular problems around diabetes in a particular region, we got the data that can inform the National Department and to inform the clinicians on what are we doing right and what are we doing wrong. So we want to take that information and present that in a way that it can be used for monitoring purposes in the first instance, it can be used for planning purposes in the second instance, and it can be used for important resource allocation issues in the third instance. So we want to develop that side, and work has already started. The fourth is around stakeholder collaboration, because NHLS on its own can't respond to all of the challenges. We have to be working in the first instance with the provinces that we support. But in addition to that, there are many other stakeholders. We've got the Department of Science and Technology on the teaching and research. We've got many NGOs that are working on the ground in HIV, in TB, in NCDs, etc. We got private providers that are also functioning within this space. And so we want to put a big emphasis on looking at how do we collaborate and how do we pool our resources and pool our expertise so that we can respond more effectively to the challenges of our country. The ninth is around NHI, and the NHI is now taking a very central role, both from the perspective of financing, but also in terms of restructuring primary healthcare, etc. So there's a strong emphasis on how does NHLS align behind the NHI planning and processes that are being implemented. And the last is something that we all should be focusing around, is protecting the community and the environment. And so there's a strong emphasis on that. So, Chair, two weeks ago, the Minister of Health, in his budget speech, talked about the quadruple burden of disease. He talked about the four pandemics. And so in developing our strategic plan, we've also looked at that and looked at how the laboratory services fit with respect to that. So the Minister talked about the most severe and the most expensive burden of pandemic, and that's of HIV, TB, and AIDS. And we got a strong focus, we got a priority program now that has been set up within NHLS with its own head that focuses on these four priorities, so that these three priorities, so that we can work very much more closely with the department to ensure that the testing, the surveillance, and the intervention are appropriate. The
The second pandemic that the minister talked about was the unacceptably high maternal and child mortality. And for the hospitals and clinics to be able to do surveillance and to intervene clinically, laboratory services are central to that. So we're looking at where should we be, what are the kinds of tests that we should be offering, what is the turnaround time that should be available so that the interventions are quick and clinicians can get patients out quicker from facilities. So that's the second area. The third area that the minister talked about was the alarming and ever-increasing incidence of non-communicable diseases. And sure, that's becoming the new challenge for South Africa. And if we don't focus on that now, we'll quickly find ourselves in a situation where we are so overwhelmed that we're not going to be able to respond appropriately. So we don't want to see NCDs, the kinds of early challenges in our country around HIV, reflecting on NCDs. So things like high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, etc., are diseases that we can, with proper prevention, we can intervene. So again, if testing is done appropriately, we can advise patients. Chair, we talked about improving the lifestyles of individuals. Now again, testing plays a very important role, because if you potentially are somebody that may get diabetes, with the appropriate testing, and in working with the hospital, the minister can then intervene with respect to prevention. The second part is obviously the actual treatment. But again, the earlier we treat, the less expensive it is. So testing plays a central role in how quickly we treat. So there's a new focus now around NCDs, and the fourth is around violence and injury. Now, Chair, in terms of the minister's NSLA, the International Service Level Agreement, the priorities for him is the NHI. So for us, the key issue is how do we set up, what is the model for NHR? Should we be centralizing laboratory services and providing greater automation? Should we be decentralizing further? Because we run 268 labs at this point yet. We have a national footprint. We're in urban areas, we're in rural areas, we're in peri-urban areas. But should we be going closer to clinics? And these are the kinds of choices now that we have to make. And for us, it's really a continuum between point of care at the one level, being right within a clinic, and sophisticated, highly automated, highly standardized services in urban areas, where we can push through hundreds of thousands of tests at a much lower cost. So we're looking at where in that continuum we should be locating ourselves in preparation for NHR. And there isn't a lot of time for that, and we've got task teams that are working on that at this moment. But that's what informs our strategy. The next point, the minister talked about re-engineering PHC and the district health system. He talked about the specialist teams, he's talked about the school health program, he's talked about ward-based primary health care. But again, we are asking ourselves, are we properly aligned to ensure that part of the strengthening of PHC, that diagnostic pathology services are aligned to ensure that that happens. So the school health programs, for instance, should we be looking at mobile testing facilities? Should we be going in behind a mobile clinic into schools when the Department of Health, the various departments of health are intervening, so that we can have results available? Is it rapid test kit? Is it point of care technology? Is it something more sophisticated than that? The same with the ward-based primary health care. The fourth area that the minister talked about, and it's an important mandate of NHLS. You see, I remember there are three mandates for NHLS. The one is service, the second is teaching, and the third is research. So the minister has talked about increasing the throughput of undergraduate medical education, increasing the number of registrars. But we also have a responsibility from a diagnostic pathology point of view, because we need pathologists, we need technologists, and we need technicians. And our sense is in thinking through the entire HR plan for the next generation of health professionals, we've not adequately flagged the important role that pathologists, technicians, technologists, robotists, and scientists play in that. So I'm highlighting that, and we're developing the strategy addressing that as well. And then with respect to the two new medical schools, we need to ensure that the schools of pathology are adequately provided for in the two new medical schools. We don't want to find that the medical schools have been set up and we've not adequately provided for the two new schools of pathology, and there's engagement with the Department of Health and faculties of health sciences. And then the final issue is around the new teaching hospital, the strengthening of the teaching hospitals in the Eastern Cape, for instance, and the introduction of new teaching hospitals. And we need to ensure that we have the laboratory capacity there, because
because in addition to the service side, diagnostic laboratory services are important for our registrars and for our undergraduate doctors in as part of their training. So we need to have lab facilities in the two new teaching hospitals. So Shane, with respect to the strategic outcomes, so what do we want to do, what do we want to achieve? We want to achieve a new service delivery model that's affordable. We want the best fit, but I've talked to that, so let me just move on. So let me get into the strategy itself now, Chair. The document, you have a document that's been circulated. I think all of you have this. This is the actual strategic plan, and in the strategic plan, Chair, we got what are the strategic objectives, we got what the activities are, we got how they would be measured, what by quarter, what are the indicators that we have, and what is the monitoring and evaluation mechanisms that are in place. Yeah, because of time, I'm not going to be able to go through the details. I'm going to just highlight the strategic drivers, and in the questions, we can take the details. So the first strategic driver we talked about is developing a new service delivery model. And with respect to that for this year, our focus is around a proposal for an alternate funding model for teaching, research, and surveillance. Chair, we've raised this previously. NHLS has to generate sufficient revenue that pays for our operation, that pays for the teaching mandate, and that pays for the service mandate. That means, and it is going to pay for the three institutes, the National Institute for Communicable Diseases, the National Institute for Occupational Health, and the National Cancer Registry. Now, for us to be able to fund that, we've got to build that in the cost of the test. And so we've started a dialogue with the national minister, and in principle he's agreed to this, and we're doing the detailed work now in this year, is around what is the cost of teaching and research, and what is the cost, and I put in the term surveillance, but it's really the two institutes. What is the cost of the two institutes, and whether or not we can agree with Treasury that there will be a separate conditional grant to fund that. So that's the one piece of work that's going to be happening this year. The second is around ensuring that we constantly drive down costs and that we keep any price increases to well below inflation. And for this year, the focus, and when I talk to the budget in the end, you'll see that, but the focus is really to keep our price increases well below inflation. And by the way, if you look at private sector trends, they well above inflation. Whether you look at hospitals, whether you look at medical aid, whether you look at any of that, they're well above inflation. The third issue, Chair, and this is an aspect that the provinces have raised repeatedly, and in fact, if you recall, Chair, at the last meeting at which Gauteng and the Eastern Cape were there, there was a big issue around inappropriate and unnecessary investigation. And so we're developing, and we've already started, but in this year we'll continue rolling out. We had 10 pilot sites last year, and we're expanding the number of pilot sites this year to introduce an electronic gatekeeping. That the electronic gatekeeping is really protocol-driven. It does not compromise the quality or the clinical intervention from the clinician. It just ensures that the test that's required by a doctor is appropriate for the necessary intervention, and you don't do anything more than that. So we now have pathologists in the background that will provide the advice, but we've set up IT systems that will then flag those tests that we believe are inappropriate for the kinds of things that doctors and nurses are doing. Remember, Chair, we can't refuse to do the test. We can only provide advice that it is inappropriate. In the end, it'll have to be the provinces that decide whether or not they're going to proceed. So electronic gatekeeping is an important, in addition to appropriate use of resources, it's also an important intervention to keep down, to minimize the spend in pathology. And then the fourth area is the gene expert. And as you know, the National Minister has identified this as a priority intervention for TB. The gene expert gives you drug resistance simultaneously with the result, and within 2 hours the result is available. For the funding that was available last year, we were able to put in a instrument into 10 districts, and for this year the plan is to expand the instrument to ensure that every one of the districts in our country have at least one gene expert available to them. So that's part of our intervention for this year. The second objective that I talked about was the best fit service delivery. So what are we going to be doing in this year with respect to that? Chair, remember this is a 5-year plan, so this is just talking about this particular year. So the first part is around point of care testing. Point of care an important intervention in really remote primary healthcare settings, because logistics are a problem, distance with our labs, etc., are a problem, because we can't create a lab in every facility in the country. 4,000 clinics are just not going to be able to have a lab. So point of care technology is a potential solution, and we're doing some pilots this year. We've done some pilots at Helen Joseph, and depending on the success of that, because here I must point out that while point of care is a potential solution, it's also an expensive solution. And so we need to determine in what setting is point of care technology appropriate. And that's the work that we're doing at the moment, so that we can advise the departments of health where and when should they use point of care. But we will provide the support, we will provide the training, and we will provide the quality assurance related to point of care. The second priority, and the detail is in this document, is to develop and implement a total turnaround time methodology. Chair, up until now, and I reported this last year when you presented on the annual report, our turnaround time is really an in-lab turnaround time. But for a clinician, the only turnaround time that matters is the point at which the specimen is taken to the point at which a result becomes available. And if we're not measuring the point at which the specimen is taken to the point that it gets to the lab, it's unhelpful for clinicians. So while our turnaround time looks very attractive, unfortunately, we didn't have the systems in place. So we now put in, last year we put in KZN, a electronic tracking system, and this year we're going to continue rolling out to other provinces. So from now, when we measure turnaround times, we'll know when was the specimen picked up from the clinic, when did we get the results back. And we've set down, if you look at this document, there are measurements that we set in place. So for example, for HIV, we said within 24 hours, a result should be available, and we'll measure against that. Now, of course, the focus will really be where we're not achieving, and then we can go in and look at why we're not achieving. And then the third point there is around standardizing laboratory technology framework, automation, looking at automation, looking at standardization, centralization, and the decentralization debate. Now, Chair, because over the last 10 years, technology in NHLS evolved around, I think in many respects, it revolved around pathologist preference. In the same way as we have the challenges in the public health system, there may be a clinician who gets up in the morning, they've heard about some new technology, they want that technology. And we're saying that can't be the basis on which we run laboratory services. It can't be the basis on which we run hospitals. We have to look at what is appropriate for our needs. We have to evaluate the technology in the context of the South African environment. You know, there may be issues around humidity, there may be issues around temperature. It may work well in the UK, but it may not work well in Eastern Cape. It may work well in Johannesburg because we've got the sophistication of air conditioners, etc. But when we get to the Eastern Cape, it causes problems. So we want, part of the work for this year is to really look at how do we standardize. And going forward, what are the platforms on which we standardize? Do we standardize by level of care? Do we standardize by province? Do we standardize by complexity? And the purpose of the standardization, Chair, is that we can negotiate much more competitive rates if we can go to two or three vendors. I mean, the process will be competitive. But instead of using 50 different platforms, we can reduce it to three. And as a result of that, we can then attract much more, get much more competitive procurement purchases, but also, not just for the capital investments, but also for the reagents. The second part is, and I talked about it already, what is the mix of centralization and decentralization? If we centralize, there's absolutely no question that we'll reduce the cost of testing, because it's all automated. We'll also reduce the amount of professionals that we need, because the new technology is very intelligent technology. It can do 90% of what it is. Technologists and pathologists, all they need to do is just verify whether or not and approve a result. So if we can centralize, the extent to which we can centralize, we need to do that partly from a cost point of view. But the other side of centralization, in an environment where skills are so scarce, we have to look at how does technology help us close the gap between what we need and what we have. The fourth area, Chair, and it's a very important area, is around quality and a customer service focus. We have all kinds of quality assurance programs in place. Well, many of our labs are also SANAS accredited, which is an independent accreditation agency. And we've got to reassure our doctors and our patients that when they get a result from us, that is properly quality assured. So here we want to, with respect to that, there are three things that we want to do. The one is we've developed systems to ensure that doctors have access to electronic patient records. The difficulty that we have here is, despite that investment, clinicians are not using it. With the exception of the Western Cape, it's hopelessly underutilized. And effectively, they can use a mobile phone. We developed the technology for a mobile phone. They can use internet facilities, and we developed an SMS printer. And the SMS printer for the remote settings, because of signal problems, etc., they can get that result. Sadly, we've not been able to get the majority of clinicians to use that. So we got for this year, we got a program to encourage we're talking customers here, but it really is the doctors, to ensure that they optimize the use of that investment that we made. And in using the electronic results, the intervention should be much quicker. And if the interventions are quicker, Chair, we can either make a decision on whether we admit a patient or discharge a patient sooner and save costs downstream. The second area is around accreditation system. And I must say, for our peripheral labs, we've not gone for SANET accreditation. So we want to deepen our internal accreditation systems with respect to that. And we have the systems in place, but we need to roll it out much faster. And this year, we've identified a number of labs, and the numbers are in the document. And the last part is to expand our EQA program. Then the next point is around alignment of resources. And remember, Chair, this is talking about 10-point plan, so these are each of the 10 points. And aligning resources, supporting services, infrastructure development for service delivery. The track tier laboratory system, information system. Our current system, we reported in previous meetings that it is quite old, very unstable, lot of downtimes, etc. So 3 years ago, we made a decision at the board level to implement track. We finished the KZN implementation. We finished the Limpopo Northwest and Mpumalanga implementation. And for this year, we'll be doing Gauteng, Free State, and the Eastern Cape. And by June of next year, we'll finish the rest of the country, which is the Western Cape and some others, and the Northern Cape. So that will be completed, and that's part of the focus of this year. The next bullet point, Chair, I've raised in previous meetings the question of technology and how do you make, and earlier on I alluded to this as well, how do you make a decision about what is appropriate for our country? We don't have a health technology assessment unit within NHLA. And what happens at this point in time, it's very reactive. So if there's a vendor that comes in with a new instrument, and often you know that these are aggressively marketed. And in aggressively marketing, they make claims that may not be factually correct. So although we evaluate the instrument, but we evaluate it in a reactive basis. And this year the plan is to really set up a proper health technology unit for diagnostic laboratory services, because the national department has got its own health technology unit, but I think it focuses largely on hospitals and clinics and that sort of thing. So we want to develop this technology, and in a more proactive way, we look at all the instruments that are available globally. We evaluate those instruments, and we then make decisions about what is appropriate for us. So like I said, if something doesn't work in the Eastern Cape, what do we then? But the second part of it is we should be engaging the vendors themselves to say what is our requirements for South Africa. And shouldn't you be responding to what our needs are? Because often we have to look at what are the needs in Europe or in North America, and it's on that basis that technology is developed. And we've seen this happening, Chair, in HIV. In HIV, we work very closely with vendors, and they're now much more responsive to what is South Africa's needs, because we have the largest HIV program in the world. We have the largest gene expert rollout in the world. So I think that people should be learning from us on what are the kinds of innovations that should be happening from a development point of view. So that's the health technology unit. The third area is around productivity improvement. We can continue throwing money at the problems that we have. But as I indicated, people are our most important resources. Without the technologists, the technicians, and the support staff, and the pathologists, we're not going to be able to deliver our services. But we've got to find a way in which we can improve our technology. We're not convinced that the 7,200 people that we hire in NHLA are or not delivering the productivity levels that are acceptable for us. Because for every rand that we spend in salary, we've got to ensure that it delivered the kind of productivity that we should be. And there have been many reports from South Africa about low productivity levels within our country. So there's a strong focus on looking at that, and part of that is looking at what are the norms that we require for a lab. So why is it in the Eastern, in KZN, for example, that for every staff member that we have, they produce two rands worth of turnover. But for every staff member in the Western Cape, for instance, we're producing 1 rand worth of testing. So we want to understand that more. We want to use some science to inform that, but in the end then to develop norms. So that the next time we make a decision about where putting in the new lab, we should know what the buildings, what should be the size of the building, what would be the instruments that you would put in, what are the people that you would put in. And laboratory services are no different to McDonald's. You know, McDonald's have a very clear sense of what should happen. So we want to develop almost a kind of McDonald's approach to laboratory services, but being responsive to what the needs are on the ground. The last part is around logistics. Actually, NHLS, our quality of testing would compare with anything anywhere in the world. In fact, in many areas, we may be even more superior because of the kinds of things that we do don't happen in other parts of the world. But our Achilles heel is around logistics. In fact, NHLS now is in the business of logistics. It's really about moving specimens around. And if we get the right logistics systems in place, we can get the specimens fast quickly, we can get a result back quickly. So we want to focus now on developing a national logistics tracking system and putting in the kinds of mechanisms that you see in the private sector. Any of you go to a private, if you go to a physician, I mean, a guy on a bike just materializes when your results become available. So we want to get into that level of sophistication. Now we want to get into that chair because there's also opportunities for us to raise revenue in the private market. The health and the medical aid industry is at this point in time complaining about the high cost of pathology. And we potentially can access some of that money. And that money would be accessed with a view to cross-subsidizing the public health system. So if we can bring in new revenue streams, we can offer the testing to public sector at even lower rates. The next issue talks to our staff, the employer of choice issue. And within that chair, we started the work last year, but we're continuing this year around the creation of a national academy, learning academy. We train pathologists. We're the only institute that trains pathologists for our country. We do that in partnership with the public health, with the academic, the eight medical schools. But we need to look at setting up our own academy that looks at continuing professional development, that's for the professionals, but that looks at our support staff and what are the requirements. Because, Chair, we made a decision at the level of the board that we can't continue competing with the private sector. The private sector salaries are completely unaffordable to us, and it's definitely unaffordable to the country going forward. And every time we increase our salaries, the private sector will increase its salaries. This is not a sustainable solution. So the approach that we're taking is to grow our own. We take young people, we put them into this learning academy. The next generation of finance staff, the next generation of HR staff, our junior pathologists will need to become managers, our junior technologists will become managers and become the chief executive in the end. The learning academy is the basis on which. So we want to attract and retain staff on the basis of people wanting to come to NHLS for personal growth and development. We may not be able to provide the kind of financial attraction, although our salaries are reasonably competitive, but they need to come to us because this is where they will learn. And even if they moved on to other institutes, because our mandate is not an NHLS mandate, our mandate is for South Africa. We come to train for the country as a whole. So the learning academy remains an important part of it, and leadership development, because management in NHLS continues to be a challenge as well. So leadership development program, I'll be faster. Then the second part of it, Chair, we've highlighted this previously. Our pathologists and our technologists, at the top end, we do reasonably well. But the difficulty is that our senior leadership in NHLS is all on the wrong side of 55. At the entry level, we do quite well. We're training technicians, we're training technologists, we're training pathologists. In the middle is a major gap. Now, the problem is for the next generation of chairs of departments, the next generation of senior managers within our lab, where are we going to get them when we got this gap? And we don't want to take young people and just suddenly move them into positions that they're then going to be unsuccessful in. So a critical part of this is developing succession plans. Working within NHLS, working with the faculties of health sciences, working with the universities of technology, to ensure that we have appropriate succession plans for the next generation. The next part talks to performance management systems. I talked about productivity, and that's why we've included it under employer choice. It doesn't really sit there, but it really talks to the question around productivity. And the performance management systems serve two purposes. The first purpose is to lift our outcomes and our outputs, and the second is to improve our the productivity. And the third part of it is then how do you link that to incentives. But the more important part is how do we, year on year, we make NHLS better and better and better. So that's what the performance management system talks to. But we will also link it to incentives, because in the end people are motivated by incentives. And the last part is in this area is around organizational culture. Okay, again, I flagged this in previous presentations. I think that when NHLS was created, we created the new entity, but I don't think we put a lot of energy in terms of a change management intervention. So essentially, the dominant culture of the time seems to still prevail in NHLS. So if we want to bed down these new values of a customer-centered focus, these new values around reducing costs, these new values around respect for the people that we work with, these new values around improving productivity and serving the communities that we should be serving. We then got for this year the first interventions around organizational culture. Research, innovation research, I talked to this, but very quickly, we really want to look at how do we take our research. When we presented our annual report last year in November, Chair, we showed you in that report that we produced 350 peer-reviewed publications. But of the 350 publications, not enough. Some of it is translating into policy, some of it is translating into service delivery intervention. But I think a lot more of that should be used to inform policy at the one level, but more importantly, to inform the way we run our health services. Are we doing the right thing or not? So we want to look at taking those research findings, and there's a deliverable here where we're going to measure our researches against whether or not it's informing policy and whether or not it's informing direct intervention on the ground. And of course, aligning our research priorities with the National Department is important. The National Health Research Committee is now in place, and so we would be taking our direction from what the National Health Research Committee prioritizes going forward. The health information powerhouse, I alluded to this. I'm not going to say anything more on that. I think you understand the importance of that. And we've already started producing a whole set of reports now, over and above what is what the provinces ask. We want to, in a more proactive way, make these reports available to provinces and to the national departments for the purposes of planning, monitoring, and resource allocation. Stakeholder collaboration. Chair, the NHLS has a biorepository, but I must say it's pretty basic. We just have the biorepository for certain specific research activities. But we're sitting with research material, we're sitting with specimens, tissues, and that sort of thing. That may be quite important 10 years, 20 years, 30 years down the line. You know, when we're talking about genetic interventions and genetic re-engineering, etc. Now, these specimens, if we have biorepositories, we may want to store them to inform, as technology advances and as science advances, we want to keep some of these specimens so that it may be valuable at that particular point in time. Because as you know, the earliest work in HIV, for instance, came out of old specimens that were kept at KZN, University of KZN. And so if we want to set up a biorepository around that. It's a very expensive intervention, but I think NHLS having the position that it does occupy at the moment, I think it's appropriate that we look at a biorepository. So we're doing the initial work around what does it take to set up a biorepository, a sophisticated national one. Is it national or is it decentralized? What would it cost and how would we fund that? The second part is we're sitting with materials that go back 100 years. You know, the first work on silicosis, for example, in the world was done in South Africa. And that information is available. Those papers are available. Those publications are available. Some of the tissues are available. But we've got to ensure that we protect that for another 100 years. We've kept it for the last 100 years, but we need to protect it for another 100 years. But it's about setting up the archives to do that. And as you know, that's quite a sophisticated area. We need to develop the skills in that area. But it's also quite expensive. But I think it's important that we protect these things for future science, for future investment. The next area is around intersectoral collaboration. I talked to that, and I'll speak to that. NHI chair, preparation for NHI, we put in place now under the guidance of the board. We have a task team that's working within NHLS. There are four streams, and the four streams, the detail again is here, but the four streams are looking at what is the new service model that will align behind NHLS? Is NHLS the current model appropriate or not? And if it is not, what is the appropriate model? The second stream talks to the governance structure. How should NHLS be governed going forward? What should the board composition be like? How should it be constituted? Should we be moving to another schedule of the PFMA, you know, from a Schedule 3, should we be going to something else? The third stream talks to the service delivery model. What is the service delivery model? And the last stream was funding. How would we fund NHLS? Because the one thing is clear to us, that the fee-for-service model is not sustainable going forward. So we're looking at different funding models. The one is around a global budget. The other is some form of capitation, what the green paper talks about, a risk-adjusted capitation. And the third is maybe some form of kind of DRG. And what would be appropriate? And what are the systems that we would need to support some of this? Because these are often very highly IT-dependent. So that's the preparation for NHI. And again, I highlighted this point. There's a huge potential in NHI for the NHLS to be a provider of choice for some of the low-cost medical aid schemes. And we're looking at then how would we intervene to that with respect to that opportunity. And whether or not there are opportunities for us to do this with other partners. For example, we're doing a pilot study with CLICS at this point in time to look at whether or not we could use CLICS as a potential phlebotomy center. So we do the back office testing for them. But CLICS, the patients can go to CLICS, have their results taken, do the other clinical intervention, at least have their bloods taken, but we will do the testing for them. So I think there are new exciting opportunities that present itself for NHLS, both from an opportunity of joint ventures, but also from a perspective of additional revenue sources. But the revenue sources, Chair, we must understand is purely to cross-subsidize the public health system test. So that's the way we think that we can become even more affordable to the public health system. Chair, I must make the point now, at this point, since I have this opportunity. There's a growing debate about whether or not NHLS is a cost-effective service. We've done enough work to demonstrate that we're a cost-effective service. Cost-effective service and affordable are two very different issues. So we're clear that we're cost-effective, but we understand that we may not be affordable to the public health system, and hence the new way in which we're looking at things. The last point talks to protecting the community and the environment. And here there are three foci here. The one is around our biomedical waste. And this biomedical waste is not just a challenge for NHLS. It's a challenge for the entire public health system. It's a major problem. You pick up any newspaper any day and you find out that some company has dumped toxic waste in some community somewhere. And our sense is that I think that there's an opportunity for a public-private partnership model to emerge, and NHLS is willing to take the lead, and we've started doing some initial work on that. In fact, Barry Krishnasamy is driving that work on should we not set up our own capacity to deal with biomedical waste. The consequences for the environment and the consequences for safety of the community are quite serious, and I think it's time that government and the private sector got together. It's clear to us that the private sector has failed to respond to the challenge at this point in time. You can't just buy bike trucks and think that you're going to be moving medical waste. I mean, we've got medical waste that is moved because it's linked to an incinerator. We've got medical waste in Patrick's region that's moved from the Eastern Cape by road to the Western Cape to be incinerated. So we need to, I think that we need to collectively apply our minds to this, but we've already set up a task team that's focusing on that. And again, the details are here. The second issue is around, you know, the normal things around recycling paper, plastic, glass, and we started some work around putting in recycling use. You know, with 268 labs, believe me, there's a lot of paper that we generate. And of course, Caterpillar has been talking about a paperless office. I think that's a little further down the line, but I think we should work to that. And the last area is around energy savings. And so we started looking at changing our light bulbs and putting in systems in place so that when you walk in and out of the room, the lights will switch on and off on its own so that we can contribute from that perspective. So Chair, just to, there's just a couple more slides on the to talk around, because the important issue is this is all very well. So we got a plan, but how do we ensure that we actually achieve that plan? And how do we ensure quarter by quarter something is happening? So we use the balance scorecard to do that, and the balance scorecard is in the document. The balance scorecard outlines the strategic objectives, it outlines the key performance areas. Each objective has a specific activities under that. You won't find that in this document, but each of the managers got the specific activities, so it'll tell you how we're going to achieve that. It'll tell you what are the smart targets that we want to, so they're specific, they're measurable, etc., etc. And it's done quarter by quarter, and we've aligned our balance scorecard to the National Department APP. It's reviewed by the EXCO and monitored by myself on a monthly basis. It's monitored and approved by the board on a quarterly basis. And once it's approved by the board, it goes to the department and to National Treasury on a quarterly basis. We've realigned our board meetings, etc., to ensure that we meet the deadlines that have been set out from a legislative point of view. And then in addition to all of this, Chair, that these documents are reviewed by our internal auditors on a quarterly basis. They don't do the entire thing, obviously it's done on a selective basis, on a random basis, but it is reviewed by our internal auditors as well. So I'm not going to get into this detail, Chair. It's all in the document. You can see there already. It's not clear there, but you can see the first column talks about the strategic imperative, the second talks about the indicator, the third says quarter by quarter what we intend to achieve, and then what's the final target for the year. And at the end of the year, Chair, when this is over, when we do our annual report, the entire thing is audited by the external auditors, and there's a report made available to the board, and it's reported in our annual statement as well, which you'll see when we do our report. So I'm not going to go into this detail. Let me just get into the budget, Chair, and it's on this note that I will end. Chair, the budget for 2012-13 were based on certain assumptions. So it's not a hit and miss thing. It's very carefully done. It's based on all the priorities that I've identified. It's based on the anxieties of our customers. So the first issue is we looked at inflation. Inflation at this point in time is running at 6.5%, but we've based all our assumptions on a 5.5% inflation. We provided for a salary increase, but obviously this will depend on categories, etc. But we made a budgetary allocation at 6.5%. That doesn't mean a salary increase of that, but we've allocated adequate funds to cover that. We've looked, Chair, because we're anticipating that this year, with all the gatekeeping and other measures that we're putting into place, we've actually made an assumption that there will be a 0% increase in volume. So we're not providing for an increase in volume, because we have to work with provinces to bring their spend in line with what they can afford. So we've provided for a 0% volume increase. I should say at this point in time, Chair, that the UK sees a 10% volume increase year on year in the UK. 10% year on year. We provided for a 5.5% test price increase, which is 1% below inflation. And Chair, this is a very important point for the committee to understand. Our debtors days at this point in time is sitting at over 100 days, 160 days. In our assumption, we provided for a 45-day debtors day, which means that something dramatic has to happen in terms of payment. In addition to that, our creditors days, when we reach the credit...
160 days is average.
Average.
Okay. Meaning that there is...
There are provinces that are sitting at below 60, and there are provinces that are sitting at above. So, Chair, it's important for the committee to understand that the assumption here is 45 days. That means provinces have to pay their bills on time. The creditors days, when we had the cash flow crisis and when we presented in the special meeting to you, Chair, our creditors days were at 100 days, 130. It's come down significantly, but we want to get back to our 35 days because that's the legislative requirement. And if we can't get our money in time, we can't pay our creditors in time. If we can't pay our creditors in time, we don't get our supplies in time. If we don't get our supplies in time, we don't deliver the services in time. And if we don't deliver our services in time, the public health system pays with longer lengths of stay, it pays with ICUs that are inappropriate, it pays with unnecessary admissions. Right? So understand that. The budget cover that we provided for is 1.7 months, and the targeted cash cover check is very low by any standard. It's 2 to 3 months. That's what we provided for.
Cash cover is the amount of cash that we have available in our bank. Because of the erratic pattern of the way we receive money, the money doesn't come in. The money doesn't come in as planned, as you can see by our day to day. So at times we don't have money to pay salaries because the money comes in too late. So if we had a cash cover, a cash reserve, then if the money comes in late, it wouldn't be a problem. We'd have money to cover salaries and statutory obligations.
Right. And then, Chair, I think we reported this previously, but if we haven't, we've been able to successfully have NHLS VAT, deregistered. So that resulted in a significant saving for the provinces. Although we have to pay back, but we don't charge back to the provinces anymore. So the net benefit to the provinces have been around 6.6%. So just to then the budget itself, the document that is in front of you, the turnover for we've got comparative figures, but you need to look at the 2013 figure, which is the last column. The turnover for the year that we're budgeting, and that's with a 0% volume increase, is just about 4 billion rand, right? Our materials that the reagents, etc., that we use, that's 1.2 billion rand, approximately. Our overheads for the year, we budgeted at 2.6 billion rand. We provided for capital expenditure of 430 million rand. Sure, that may seem like a lot of money, but remember, this year, all our capital projects were put on hold because we've not had the cash flow to do any capital intervention. We've done zero, not this year, the last financial year. So there's 415 million rand, and I'll share with you the detail in a few minutes time. Invested in debtors is, I'm going to leave that definitely in there. The net cash generated is going to be 273 million. That's obviously based on the assumptions that we made. If those assumptions go out, that net cash could end up with a negative figure. So if we're sitting at 60 days, for example, then I'll assume that it will have a negative cash flow. Right? And then the capital expenditure that we provided for as a percentage of turnover, it's slightly high because of the backlog in capital investments that we need to do, and it's a 10%. Debtors and creditors, they said, I thought I should just put that there now at the moment. You can see the trend. It was the green is the green is debtors days, and you can see how it fluctuates. But remember, what you need to look at for the purposes of this budget presentation, we want to see it dropping from 130 days to 45 days. It literally weeks. So something dramatic has to happen. And obviously the concomitant benefit of that, you'll see the same trend with credit today. Because we have the money, we'll pay our credit on that. Chair, this is just the current update on our debtors. The area, you can look at the bulk of the provinces at the bottom, and we're not too seriously concerned about that. They're still pretty high, but provinces, I must say, following the intervention by the National Minister and this committee, we've seen provinces being much more responsive to paying on time. So for February, March, we've seen a complete change in many of the provinces, including Gauteng. You can see Gauteng has improved, but it's not improved anywhere near what we require. So we're still sitting with a 400 million
534 million debt in Gauteng. They are working with us at the moment through the provincial treasury to try and clear out that debt, and they've given us a reassurance that by June they will clear that debt. The difficulty that we have is KZN chair, the national minister has appointed a judge. Obviously I can't discuss the detail because that is still under discussion, but the mediation should have finished by March. Unfortunately, for a variety of reasons, and I should say not because of NHL, but for a variety of reasons, this is only going to finish at the end of May. And I had hoped, Chair, and the Board had hoped, that by the 1st of April this matter would have been resolved, and at least if we were still discussing the issues around the past, we could have started this year with a clean slate. Now we're sitting in a situation where we're going to start this year with the same flat fee basis. Now we've informed the province again that fee for service is the basis on which KZN is built. Now I don't know whether they're going to accept that, because I suspect they're going to say that until the mediation is over, we're not sure. So we're starting this year on a very, very bad note with respect to KZN. And remind the members again that KZN's consumption is around 90 million and they're paying 43 million. Yeah. So they're paying less than half of what they're consuming. So we're going to very quickly find ourselves in a situation where we've got a problem. I think that Gauteng has demonstrated a strong commitment to pay its debt, and the provincial treasury is working with that. But again, the trend, as you can see, Che, is still not anywhere near the 45 days that we would be expecting. Then capital is broken up in this way. Land and buildings is 276 million rand. Laboratory equipment is 77 million rand. And laboratory equipment, Chair, is a problem for us because what we've done is we've slowed down the acquiring new equipment, because we're talking about standardizing equipment. So until we finalize the plans around standardizing, it won't make sense for us to be bringing in new equipment if we're not sure what is the standardized platform. So this year we're planning to spend 77, and IT, you know, laboratory services is very highly IT dependent, and so we've got to upgrade our systems, but we also have to pay for new software. We've got to pay for licenses, etc. And TrackCare, the rollout of TrackCare is quite expensive. So 51 million has been provided there, and then furniture and equipment is a small amount, and office equipment is 3 million rand, because there's quite a few changes in our labs. There are new facilities that are coming up, and we have to respond to them. So it's 413 million rand. Chair, before I conclude, Chair, I just wanted to make a comparison with the UK. Is it that we're constantly being criticized, and I think that in a democracy, it's right that people should be constantly questioning. But we've got to understand that from the board perspective, the NHLS board, these concerns that have been expressed by provinces remain the center of our focus. And in fact, if you listen carefully to the presentation, you'll see that our strategic plan really focuses on those concerns. But we must also see pathology services as part and parcel of the clinical management of patients. It's a central part of it, because as I've indicated, without a test result, it's almost impossible for a clinician to intervene. 7 out of 10 or 8 out of 10 patients depend on some form of diagnosis. And if we intervene appropriately and lab services are used appropriately, the potential for saving cost in health systems is huge. So I think lab services cannot be a grudge purchase. It cannot be a grudge purchase. It's like medical aid. When we're buying health insurance, we're really upset about it. But that day when you really fall ill and you have to get into an ICU is the day when you see the value of it. So, and diagnostic laboratory services are not any different. Now, I just want to use a comparison with the NHS. We hire 7,500 people in 268 labs to deliver services to 51 million people in South Africa. The UK is a similar population. It's around, we're actually under 51 million. 50.5 million is the supplementary figure. The UK is 51 million people. Not the UK, England. Just England. 51 million people, more or less the same. I don't know how many labs they run, because we're looking at it at the moment. They use 25,000 staff to deliver their services. 25,000 staff. If we had to just double our staff, we're going to look at 1.3 billion added to our bill. So when we're looking at affordability and we're looking at whether or not we run a cost-effective service, these crude comparisons already tell you that we're getting pretty good value for money. I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that we can do better than we currently do, and we'll continue focusing on that. But I think that we must see lab services as part of the entire healthcare continuum. We've just got dropped off that continuum. So I want to end on those comments, but also, Chair, to thank on behalf of my board, to thank the Honourable Chair, the Honourable Members of the Committee for your support and guidance. We constantly get really good support and guidance from the Committee. But more especially, Chair, for your support during the cash flow crisis. Because I think, had we not had that support, we have got into a really serious crisis. I mean, there were points, as my CFO has indicated, we were not sure whether we would have had money to pay our staff. But from the intervention of the committee, the intervention of the national minister, the situation was turned around literally in weeks. Within 3 or 4 weeks, we were able to reduce our creditors by half, in fact, by about half. So, Chair, can I end on that note? I know I took longer than I should have, but I thank you.
Thank you, sir. I decided to leave you to continue so that you could round it up as you have rounded it up. Chair, you want to make comments? Chair, please.
No, not really, Chair. Just to pick up on the comment that I made before, that the real mission of the NHL is really to make the services accessible to many people. That is why when we dealt with the crisis before, the financial crisis before, that it became a situation where we could neither achieve the objectives that we had in place at the beginning of the year, nor simply meet the demand for the people that we owe for our services. So it becomes a very critical area of work for the nation. NHLS now is the heart of the world. Because here we are, creating the real bottom, trying to say, how does one make these services affordable to the public sector? But with that objective, you always run the risk of cutting too deep into the bill. I think the CEO with the illustration of the situation in England is indicative. What makes England be able to do infrastructure services at this type of human resources and this type of expenditure, when in fact we've got a similar population? So these are the challenges that it leads to. Nevertheless, Chair, this committee would do well again to be behind the NHLS in terms of finding that solution for the public sector. We must find a solution not based on a fee for service, where actually every month, every year, we're going to be looking at this. We must find a solution that is going to enable the public sector once and for all to meet its obligations in a more suitable manner. And part of this plan is seeking exactly those kinds of mechanisms. I thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. Thanks for that report. I think the members are going to engage on it. I think we definitely understand the need for laboratory services, and I think our professionals cannot do without you. But the problem is, we always want to find out whether are they doing the right investigation for the right patient. That is going to be within the limit. And the other part is that, I mean, what one has been trying is to try and regulate the cost of healthcare in South Africa as a whole. And you happen to be part of that. Then when you see things going on, you ask yourself, why did we have NHLS? Is it because we wanted to make sure that it's affordable, or what do we want to achieve? Not knowing very well that we want our health professionals to be able to change the situation, the health indicators in South Africa. And we think that is going to happen. But the problem sometimes is not talking to each other, communication. I think it's important to communicate so that we can understand each other why. Because for you to survive, you've got to have something. And these are the things that you are trying to do. I'm a little bit very unhappy that the negotiations have not been sorted out. But we'll see how we deal with that. But members, can we break for tea 10 minutes and then we engage them after the tea? Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Now, you are mentioning something that you want to pilot with.
Yeah.
is it not possible that you could look at the independents, because they feel that they are actually
okay.
dying
okay.
because of the fact that the the law makes everybody who could open up a chemist. So it's just a question. I know you made a complaint here that all of you are over 50.
Yeah.
And you know, life expectancy in South Africa for males is about 50.
Mm.
But it means you have managed to be.
Yeah. Most of us should have been dead by now.
Yeah, over that. But I was actually, maybe your worry is that the people who got youth leaders, you don't want youth leaders, you just want to be alone. I don't want to go further than that. Okay, remember that those were that was the presentation. I know you want to ask questions. I see Uma Ngobo. I see Uma Keng.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for your presentation. Your presentations are always very interesting. We're talking about medical waste,
mm-hmm.
and have that medical waste have having to be moved from one area to the other,
mm-hmm.
to the extent of moving it from one province to the other. Is there a way that you can have a conversation with the environmental affairs and see how it can assist in coming up with more ideas, and maybe they can even bring other like structures. The second question that I have, I understand the electronic method that you use, but logistically, in moving this, in moving whatever you want to move from point A to point B, and whilst you're going to point B, then point D comes in,
mm-hmm.
Do you have adequate logistics to deal with that? And a more, I don't know what must I say. What is your gender component in the establishment as a whole? Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. Janice, you're going to be the next one. You know, there's something that has happened in Parliament one day. I think the leader of the GA was reading her speech from an iPad.
Mm-hmm.
There was a big question, why is it parliamentary to use that? Now I'm asking myself. Okay, Dennis.
Right, thank you. Just interesting, following on from the question about medical waste, I think this is a real problem too. I think some municipalities have their own medical waste. Certainly here within the metro that I'm familiar with, have their own facilities. And I just wonder about the provinces who have to bring their stuff so far away, whether this couldn't be encouraged, that they do their own, create their own sites. It seems to be very wasteful to travel all that way. Surely this is a business that could be started. Then I was also just wondering about whether it's realistic to expect zero growth in demand, given the population growth, as well as the phasing in of new measures to reduce demand. What will happen to patient care? I know some of our private hospitals are really excellent in helping this, but I'm concerned about the other hospitals,
mm-hmm.
and whether you can. And I was in a police forum meeting last night where I was shocked to hear about the time delays before getting results from autopsies and things like that. Now, I don't know whether this is just the time that it takes to get the results after you've stabilized the organs and so on,
mm-hmm.
but this does affect justice as well.
Mm.
And, you know, if we think of how poor our justice system is, with cases just going on for months, or in fact years, of one case that I know in particular, but if you're wanting to bring criminals to book, we need those services very quickly. So that is something that really bothers me. And then... I think want to know about the morale of staff when you've had such a situation where, you know, you've got no money and people know that their salaries are in danger or whatever. Have you been able to keep the staff going? Because I think motivation is so good. And I must say, I was very impressed by your report. I really enjoyed it. I'm new to this committee. But it sounds as though the leadership is, you know, doing the right thing. But are you able to buoy up people so that they are working as hard as they can? And they're not just taking things slowly. I'm going to go slow.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Maybe it would be right for you to look at this way. I know in the Eastern Cape at some stage there was something like conniving.
Mm-hmm.
The connivance where certain people had to be pushed up of the industry.
Mm.
And it was in a way of making sure that those who were powerful are using centers that are very far from Eastern Cape.
Mm.
Probably when you come in, that will be sorted out, because I know that was the situation.
Okay.
And it would be interesting to comment about this forensic.
I'll do that, yeah.
Okay,
please.
Thank you, Shepherd. Firstly, let me acknowledge the presentation, because some of the questions that have already been answered here, so it's not necessary for us to do it. But I'm still having a problem regarding, but it's clearly illustrated to your statistics and also as a challenge and as a threat to you. According to the NHLS Act, research is one of your mandates, if you do it, but unfortunately it's not receiving, you know, the enjoyable information. The main problem according to your strategy, and you clearly said that funding comes from the grant from external people. But now as a result it becomes very problematic for you to retain most skillful researchers within the NHLS. But now what I wanted to know from the side, what is it that you are doing to look into this funding model? Because it's previously been a problem. Not helping me to retain the skills and stuff that we're having. Second to that, it's also in line with that. One of the still a problem within the organization. We are still having problems to retain, even to recruit the staff, especially those who are doing your core professional duties.
Mm-hmm.
Now, why is it that? Because what you said here, you said that you are not, well, when you started to present, you show us how you align yourself. The Department of Health in whatever you are doing. But here you say that those you don't, you can't retain them is because you don't have the 10-year human resource plan as the one that the department is taking. Why can't you implement the same strategy so that you can try to manage to minimize your problem? The other thing, I'm happy that NHLS it's managed to envisage that the introduction of NHI brings an impact to your organization. And I'm happy that you said that you came up with a task team to look into the service delivery model, the governance structure, and everything.
Mm-hmm.
But what I wanted to find out from you, all whatever system, whatever mechanism that the task team was looking for, is it being costed? Because you never talk about how whether it's costed or not. Maybe you can indicate to us in terms of the
question.
Thank you.
Okay, Mr.
Hush. Thank you, Chairperson, and thanks for the presentation. I always ask this question because I was there when wrong forms were used at the clinic.
Mm-hmm.
The forms, and you find that now when the national laboratory have to be paid, they are being paid from equitable sale instead of being paid from the grant. Is that problem still existing? When we were listening to KwaZulu-Natal about the way they are not paying. One of the reasons they said that when they compare you with other service providers, they found that you were very expensive. But I could hear you were saying it is not like that. But I really want to know, is it a problem?
Yes.
And I would like even to know, I know that the problem is at another level.
Mm.
to really know what is reduced, because at the end of the day, instead of it going down like houses, it's going up. Because my take is, when you own, you must pay at the end of the day. More so that I take specimens, I send them to NHI, then I have to pay those services. What is really the problem? You talk much about quality. And I know that quality, where there is quality, there is demand. You cannot just get quality cheap. Now that you are having this problem of you being old, and this is the NHI is coming with need quality. You are owed such a lot of money. Do you really think that, or when you participate, because I'm happy that you have talked with the minister, when you talk about this thing, are we saying as department, will we afford, because NHI is coming with a demand of quality? Then we pick up, when we talk about the turnaround time, you talk about when the courier takes the statement from the clinic. Now, when I'm sitting here, maybe you come to my clinic in Molatedi, 200 kilometers away from Kampala, in the morning. But during the day of that morning, I have to take certain specimens. Do we really consider when was the specimen taken? Because the picking time, you may be picking up the specimen which was there for a lot of hours. And I will even like, because I'm a lay person in your field, that the taking of the specimen has any effect. Then the last one, Chairperson, I'm sorry. When you go to slide 27, you have that some indication of the provinces, but in Western Cape is blank. I would be saying that even if it is performing good, it would be in zero, and I will expect to see it there in a graphic form that is on zero. Because I do even have numbers here, the numbers here up to zero. Now, when it is blank, it doesn't tell me. I'm not here in this committee meeting. I'm just reading it alone. Is it because it's omitted? Is it because it's performing good, or it's not performing good? Thank you, Chair.
Thanks, Mr. Father. Thank you, Martin.
Thanks for the presentation. I think most of my question has been answered. Firstly, I could say we thank for the presentation, and also you always have numbers and it's nice. We also commend you for that. Otherwise, my first question is, if we look at page 4, bullet number 1, the main area, letter that is missing there, there's something that is missing in that sentence, but the same for the second. If you can rectify page 4, first bullet on process, that says this plan is aligned to the 5-year strategy plan of the individual and to the
end user.
And that's okay.
Yeah, sorry.
Thank you. As much as my questions are being asked, but I think some of them, I have a different angle. On the issue, on page 17, on the issue of testing those 14 years, but I still say, Yes, you say you are talking about the support schemes and the funding policies and the appropriate schemes. Are there any changes that will affect NHS negatively from this NHI? And also, the restructuring, will it have any impact in quality service delivery? And lastly, I've been talking about the affordability. On the issue on page 18, we talked about on the protecting community and environment. We talked about, yes, and what about, we talked about cost effectiveness and financial cost. So I have a question in this family from this decade. That's because I'm coming from this decade. Why is this family from this decade all the way to this decade just for information? If you're talking about financial cost and cost effectiveness, why is it so? What is lacking here for God, to my understanding, to go to come for the director, it is taking all the way from the CNK, a lot of money going back, that will be covered by the whole thank you, sir. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Mom King.
Thank you, Chair. And thank you to the presenters. My question the first one, how are you going to make some means to provide the quality the affordable and the sustainable health laboratory service and to train for health science education. Number two, what have you to do to decrease the high maternal and the child mortality? Thank you.
The only male in the community. Listen to me, because she's here sitting next to me. No, I forgot about myself. You always forget about yourself. So you'll pardon me for forgetting myself. Okay,
Dada Khara. I thought there was a statement you were making without kidding us. Chair, I'm going to have only three questions. And like everybody else, I think your presentation was very elucidating and very clear. The question I'm going to ask, some of the questions I'm going to ask are not necessarily related to your presentation as you made today. What I wanted to check, because in terms of your NHL strategic plan 2010 to 2015, you stated, I don't know whether I should say turnover or income from the other, you call it grants, from MRC, the Cancer Association of South Africa, including pharmaceutical companies, private donors, and overseas institutions. That's why I don't know whether to say it's a takeover or is it income. Because if it's as a result of some work you have done, it becomes a takeover. But if it's not as a result of work you have done, it's just a contribution. It then just becomes an income. What I'm interested in is how much each of these institutions. You might not be able to answer it now, but I would prefer that you give it to me in writing about how much does these institutions contribute to NHLS, and if there's any other work you do as a result of the contribution they give, maybe I'll be more interested in the percentage of their contribution. What each one contributes, what is the percentage of the overall funds you get from them as part of your work, and what type of work have you done? I mean, how much have you spent on doing work for them, which I would regard as part of the turnover. And the others. I mean, if it's just like maybe the South African Sugar Association, out of their guilty conscience, they believe they must give you something because they cause more health problems by their product. It's a different ballgame. That's number one. But I'm also interested in the National Cancer Registry. About how far are you up to date now? I mean, there was a time when there was some problems about the collections of data and the level of data. I'm interested to know about how far it is. And the other one was provoked by your own statement on logistics to transport specimens. There was a time, I think it's the National Health Cooperative, who came and they showed us a nice aeroplane that was going to fly from here to there, and then what happened to that aeroplane?
Yeah.
It operated at the years, the years went by. What happened to that aeroplane?
Okay.
You can see that you are old in this community. But because of the quarter, I can narrate the story. You know, one man was sleeping with the girlfriend. And then when he looked down at the bottom, there were 6 feet. The feet that were there were 6. And then he asked the wife, why do we have 6 feet there? We're supposed to have 4. And then the wife said, no, it's 4. Go out and count them. And the poor man went out and counted, and there were 4 indeed.
Yeah.
Because he was not counting his own. So that I did count myself. Okay, count myself.
You've got technology and technologies, and we are going to get more, moving on with the time. Do you have a mechanism or strategy of maintenance of those various technologies that you have?
Thanks. The CEO and the team, those are the clarity of questions from the committee. So, your response.
The chair, thanks very much. I think we can mix Ralph, you understand?
I think, first of all, Chair, I think we have to appreciate the comments that have been made on the quality of the presentation. We value those comments very much, indeed, in the NHL. Now, I'm going to take just a few of the questions, not the very technical ones. I think the first question that was posed by the Chair was very interesting to me. The question of comparing South Africa or the NHLS with the England scenario, and the fact that we are dealing with laboratory services, and therefore there might be not so much bias there. I think that I would actually want to argue the point more myself, in saying that one has to be very cautious, because if you have a distribution in England of disease burden that is inclined towards non-communicable diseases, and ours is inclined towards infectious diseases, one has to actually go in and disaggregate the cost implications of each one of the tests that are taking place. So before we conclude that, in fact, a study has been done and we have these discrepancies between England and South Africa, I think we would need to have gone deeper into it in order to make sense of the question that you posed. So I agree with you completely that one mustn't just take and paste from and benchmark from countries without really going into the substance of what goes into the package.
Yeah.
Now, the other interesting comment you made was the idea of using clicks as a way of ensuring that we access more people, because really that's what it is. And again, your comments are very relevant, that that pharmacists, in fact, one should not, I know that CLIPS is much more widespread than some of the individual pharmacists, but I think one cannot close the eyes towards the pharmacists that are out there practicing on their own. I think the NHLS, we take the counsel, and the NHLS should, in fact, investigate if that those plans are maturing, and then investigate wider the implications of other pharmacies. I think it was also member Manuel was asking what is the equity distribution of the NHLS. I think this is a very important question insofar as the board of the NHLS is concerned. And this is one area we've been tracking in the NHLS over the years. And I can say, if you look at the, it's just that today we're dealing with the plan rather than the report. Mm-hmm. But if you look at the report of the NHLS, indeed you will see improvement in the distribution, both in terms of gender and to a lesser extent in terms of disability. And the problem is not of the overall representativity in the NHLS, because that is not contested. I think the NHLS has got a bias towards, in terms of gender, towards more female. Yeah. But the problem comes in when you look at the core functions of the NHLS. When we're looking at the trained personnel of the NHLS, when we look at the pathologist, for instance, you will find that, and we've been grappling with this problem now over years, and the wider health also grapples with this problem, that we are not able to turn around the representativity when it comes to some of these kids, because it takes so much longer to train. But if you look at the intakes at medical schools now and the newly qualified, you can see that there is already improvement in terms of representativity when it comes to gender. I personally don't believe that when it comes to the disability, we have stretched our limits in terms of ensuring that, because that is still poor in the NHLS. It does not. I take it from the premise that in every society, 10% of people are disabled. Mm-hmm. Now, if we apply that formula across, then NHLS cannot be doing well in this area. So I think that we should even though there's improvement, but I think that we should continue to share, particularly with organizations that represent people with disabilities, to share information and to share skills in terms of how we can increase that within the NHLS and indeed within the wider public sector. So I think that was a very important question indeed. I think it was the member Dennis who also raised the question of how can you budget for zero increase in terms of volume in the NHLS. I think that's also a very valid query. As I said before, it's really a question of being, between the rock and the hard place. You try and budget so that you come out better on the other end. Mm. But sometimes you will not be aware when you're cut so deep in the bone that the services that you're concerned about become implicated on. So it is a balancing act, and I would agree, and I would not be able to answer the question, but I think that we need to take, I don't take it as a question, I take it as a caution to the team, to the NHLS, to say, you must definitely make sure that the services are not suffering. I think those were the more general questions that I think the question of the environment was misunderstood. So maybe you need to clarify that we are not referring to the NHLS, but we are referring to some other waste movement. Yeah, no. For now, I think that we stop there. Then we can take the more, maybe some of them will come back.
Okay. Thank you, Chair. Again, Okay, Ngijima, so thank you very much. I think they're very insightful and valuable comments and questions, certainly for us to reflect on. The first set of questions, Madam, was around the medical waste and the conversation with environmental affairs. I think that's a really useful suggestion. We haven't taken that up, and perhaps that's something that we should take up with environmental affairs and with other agencies as well to see how we can address this challenge. The next question around electronic tracking and do we have adequate logistics. The big challenge for NHLS, I mean at this point I should point out that there isn't a single facility in the country where we do not pick up a specimen at least once a day. Right? So when we initially started off, there were times where we were picking up once a week and once every three times a week, etc. So there isn't a single facility where we don't. But having said that, our logistics is certainly not anywhere near adequate from a turnaround time perspective. So, and that's part of the plan, addressing that in the short term. The agenda question was addressed, so I'm not going to look at that, except to comment that I think that there are huge, medicine in general, healthcare in general, is actually being, it's a greater feminized workforce. You're seeing significant changes in healthcare. Even the intake that Dr. Ngijima talked to at medical schools, the majority of our medical students now are actually women. So it means that we have to start thinking seriously about how do we re-engineer the workplace to accommodate women, because sadly, other changes in society has not happened in the way that we would like to see it happen. So, you know, for example, sharing of roles and doing all of that sort of thing. So we, one of the things that we are looking at is how do we re-engineer the workplace? How do we set up working hours? We can have technology, for instance, where somebody can work from home. They can have a microscope from home that's linked up by using IT. So we're looking at all of those sorts of options. Then the last question that you asked was around whether or not do we have the strategies to maintain the technologies. I think again that's a very important question, and the work, we're only starting that work on that, about what are the appropriate technologies and maintaining it. So I think I'll treat that as a comment at this particular point in time, and perhaps give a fuller report when we have the next meeting. Then the next set of questions were around the medical waste. Can the provinces create their own sites? I think the member raised the question of municipalities. Now you see, the municipalities have, when they talk about medical waste, they actually have incinerators. But the incinerators that is required for medical waste is quite sophisticated and quite big. So medical waste, normally in the municipalities, they can take some paper and some wood and that sort of thing and maybe dispose of it. So it's quite a sophisticated area. And Chair, you raised the question about what in the Eastern Cape there was this sort of muscling in and muscling out and a small mafia operating. The reality is that one part manages the logistics and another part manages the actual incinerator. And if you don't have a vertically integrated service, then the people who own the incinerators, they actually control what happens outside there. So the incinerators are not distributed across the country, because it's a huge investment to put up the incinerator. So it's not distributed across the country, which answers the question about why is the medical waste moving from the Eastern Cape to the Western Cape, and is it expensive? But remember, we put out national tenders. So the price will be determined in the national tender. But obviously, for the company itself, it will be expensive. And often what happens is a company will have more than one province to deal with. So they'll make up the pricing in such a way that it evens out. But the big question is that if you don't control the entire value chain, then you're going to have a problem, because the guy who's controlling the incinerator is the most important person. Because you can have the trucks, but where are you going to move it to? So when you have this problem, that's when I suspect the guys dig a hole in the middle of nowhere and bury the stuff. Mm-hmm. So that's why I was talking about how do we set up these partnerships. So the provinces, madam, to set up the incinerators is a huge cost. And our approach was to say, why don't provinces, NHLS, and anyone else who deals with medical, including the private sector, come together and look at a solution and look at some kind of public-private partnership with respect to that. The question around justice, I should point out, forensic medicine is not in our mandate, so just in case you think that we are responsible for it, it's actually the National Department of Health. But having said that, we have the capacity, and our act does not prevent us from taking on the responsibility for forensic testing. So forensic tox, etc., we have the skill. It's a similar skill, whether you're, whatever type of pathologies you have. We have the skill, we have the infrastructure, but I think it really, in the end, it's up to the National Department to decide whether or not it wants to give over that mandate to us. But I think that we are able, capable, and willing to take on that responsibility. The important question around the morale and what has happened during this cash flow problem. I think it would be naive for us to believe, Chair, that when you go through these difficult times, and however much you try to manage this, and however much information you may want to share with people, The grapevine option is much more powerful than the official channels of communication. So the message that gets out is, you know, do I really have a future in this organization? So it's had an impact, but we put in mechanisms in place to manage that. So I think during the time we lost some staff, but you know, not something that really concerns me. What happened during the time is we, as Dr. Ngijima said, we didn't hire staff because we didn't have money. And in fact, that put a huge burden on our staff. And I must say, in that time, our staff were absolutely phenomenal, because it's in the dark and difficult time that you really see amazing outcomes from staff. And in this dark and difficult time, our staff just rolled up their sleeves and they just got on with the work. So, and you know, I think that we've got to find a way in which we reward them. But it had an impact. But I think we're dealing with fairly mature, stable, and often many are professionals. So we don't have the same challenges that many other organizations would have, but morale was definitely affected negatively. On the question of the research mandate and is it adequately funded, you know, I think there have been some reports that have been put out by the Department of Health and by other agencies. We, as a country, we don't spend anywhere near enough on research. And if we, less than 1%, I think, and we should be spending, I think, around 5% or something on research. So clearly we have to invest more money in research. But if we invest that money, we have to build that into our test prices. So the discussion that we're having with the department is for conditional grants to finance that now at the moment. And I won't go into the detail around it, but effectively we're looking at new funding models for research in the form of a conditional grant. And if the department commits to committing more to research, then I think that this is where we can make the kind of investments. But research is really important to inform everything that we do. Otherwise, we're shooting in the dark. So, again, I'll take it as kind of advice. Then on the question of the problem of recruitment and the 10-year plan. Now, we allude to the 10-year plan, but we've now developed, we're working with the department to contribute our section to the 10-year plan. So the pathology partner, we've already, in fact, by the end of March last year, we had put in quite a significant input to the national department on what would be the requirements for pathology, and that includes technologists, technicians, and scientists going forward. On the NHI, did we cost it? That's part of the work that we do. So it's not just developing the strategy. We do, together with the strategy, we're developing implementation plans. We'll look at the costing for the implementation plans, and the deadline for that is by September of this year, we'll present detailed plans with the costing to the board for consideration. Then on the equitable share, and whether or not it's appropriately used share. Remember, the equitable, where the funds are charged to is not an NHLS responsibility, that's the provincial responsibility. And at this point in time, the national department is trying to sort out whether or not the equitable share is used appropriately, especially for the priority tests, etc. So what we've done now is we've developed different set of forms. So for the equitable share portion, there'll be a particular form, and for the conditional grant portion, there'll be another form. So we ensure that it's charged correctly, and we're working with the department to implement that. We thought that it would be implemented 1st of April, but we couldn't get consensus with the provinces on what should go on to each form, because, you know, as you all know, consulting 9 provinces is not the easiest thing in the world. So, and then the question about why are they not paying and what is the problem and the comparison with the private sector. We presented previously to this committee, obviously KZN has a different perspective on it, but our presentation showed that we're sitting at between 30% and 40% below private sector prices on average. We made the point previously, Chair, that it is not appropriate to pick up a set of tests and say these tests are cheaper in the private sector. You've got to look at a basket of tests and then make the comparison. And based on a basket of tests, we provided evidence that showed that we're sitting at 30 to 40% below the private sector. We're saying that it's possible to reduce it even further. But the basis of the mediation is focusing on that as well. So it may not be appropriate for me to go into all of the details, because the mediation is also dealing with that fundamental question. And what is the problem? The problem is that KZN was paying a lot less for tests when they ran the service, and it's increased significantly. What does not seem to be factored in is that when they ran the services, they didn't have the footprint that we currently have. When they then ran the services, they ran it with just over 800 staff. We're now running it with 1,500 staff. And it's all based on demand. When they were running the services, the HIV, TB, cytology, etc., was not anywhere near the volume that we're currently seeing. So that's the explanation for the increase. But again, it's an issue that's in the mediation. So hopefully they'll be able to see the light at the end of the day. On the question of quality, and quality is not cheap, I think that's a very fundamental question about, for quality, you've got to pay. But let me answer this in this way. Is quality being compromised because of the current crisis that we have? We've ensured that every quality standard that we have, internal and external, is maintained irrespective of the cash flow problems. Going into NHI, we've got to guarantee that we monitor the quality standards that we should be delivering. Because if we give an inappropriate or an incomplete result to a physician, the intervention is going to be very different to what it should really be. So we understand the issues about quality. But having said that, remember the National Department also has put a lot of value on quality, because it set up now the Office for Standards Compliance. The bill is in front of you. So indeed. So I think that our focus would be, we would never ever compromise quality. And any model for NHI must be developed in a way that never compromises quality or access. Because those are two fundamental principles. No. So we will keep, and the board keeps a close eye on that. The turnaround times, and whether or not we're monitoring turnaround times from the point that the clinician takes the specimen to the point that it's picked up by NHLS. Now that's quite a difficult area to manage. So if you look at a hospital, and if a doctor takes a specimen at 9 o'clock, but it only gets to the collection point in the hospital at 11 o'clock, it's hard for us to manage that. We can only manage the point at which we pick up the specimen, and it's hard to track it because it calls for a very sophisticated tracking system. So I'm not sure how we deal with that, but I think that we can go back and apply our minds to that particular question. And then the Western Cape graph issue. Actually, Western Cape is there, but for some reason it came out as white. So if you look at it, you'll actually see it somewhere there. But we'll correct the graph, Chair, and resubmit it to you. So for some bizarre reason, it came up as white. I can tell you it's not a Freudian slip, right? So are there any changes that affect the NHLS negatively? The question about the changes at the moment, and what effect will it have on affordability, for example. I think that at this point in time, the current changes, we're seeing the changes as an opportunity for us to actually transform the organization. So we're not seeing the changes as kind of challenges. We're really seeing it as, how does it present an opportunity for us to do things differently? And in many respects, when you have stable organizations and you want to introduce radical changes, you get strong resistance to those changes. So things like NHI and what have you, they're creating actually the burning platform for us to introduce those changes. And I must say our staff have been really responsive, because they can see that it's the external environment that's introducing these changes. And if we don't position ourselves behind this, we could easily find ourselves being irrelevant in a short period of time. So I think we've seen the changes from that perspective. And the question was about the cost of travel. I've dealt with it, the Eastern Cape issue. How are we going to make some means to provide quality, affordable, and sustainable services? Now, it's a complex question, so I can't respond to it in detail now. But a lot of our strategy, if you read the strategy in detail, it tells us how would we incrementally respond to that particular question. So I think if there are particular questions around the strategy, I'm happy to engage on a one-on-one, even if it's outside the meeting. And then, how would we assist to decrease maternal and child mortality? The central part about decreasing maternal and child mortality is about ensuring that, in fact, laboratory services are central to that process. Because if we did the testing timeously, when the woman's pregnant, when the child is delivered, and after the child is delivered, If we have adequate services right where clinics are, I think that we could contribute significantly to reducing child and infant mortality, including the Klebsiella outbreaks, etc. Laboratory services are central to that, because our microbiologists go in there and I understand what went wrong. And then immediately we work with clinicians to ensure how do we fix that up. And if you look at the Eastern Cape outbreak, if you look at the Gauteng outbreak, etc., the first person, in fact, on site when you have that outbreak is actually a microbiologist from NHLS lab. Now, because we're a back office service, we're not seen as making these big interventions. But again, we can play an important role. And I think that point of care technology, Chair, is where if we start investing and doing the right thing, and NHLS controls it, not the province. That if NHLS controls it from the point of view of placing the instrument, monitoring the quality, collecting the data, training the individuals, etc., we could be a serious player in the prevention side of the of things. And then the last set of questions were around the income from grant. I'll make that available to you. I can't give you the answer to that, but we'll make that information available. How is it broken down? Who are the parties? How is it utilized, etc.? We have all that information because that's also audited. And remember, any relationship that we have with a donor, firstly, it's not income. It's not revenue. It's grant. It's income. Because we've got to put in a proposal, and out of the proposal will come an allocation, and out of the allocation we have to account whether we've achieved or not achieved that. The question about NCRN, is it up to date? Now, I must say, Chair, at this point in time, the historical issues is not brought up to date because we're still having a problem with getting the data from the private sector. But we've committed that in this financial year, we will present a comprehensive report to bring everything up to date. And we've spoken to the National DG around this because she's also asked the same question. But in terms of going forward, all the systems are now being put into place to ensure that they will come out timely. Just remember our difficulty previously, where there were some sectors within the private sector that was not willing to share that data under the pretext of confidentiality, etc. But the legislation has been sorted out now. So certainly going forward, we will sort it out, and this year we will catch up on all the backlog issues. And then the last issue is about the UAB. I'm glad you actually asked that question because, you know, I'm really excited about the UAB. And we did this presentation at that time. It actually is in the strategic plan. We've finished all of the pilot studies. The pilot studies have demonstrated that this technology, for the benefit of new members, it really, what we were doing is we were looking at, is there another way we can deal with logistics of specimens for deep rural and really remote settings? So particularly if you look at the Maputo land services, for example, the clinic is actually across there, but you have to drive around the lake for half a day to get to the clinic. So if we could put in, and basically what we were looking at is a remote controlled aircraft, a small aircraft, that the military uses for surveillance purposes. So we looked at that technology, we removed the camera from the technology, and we replaced it, because they use the camera to then see where the enemy is. We use that space to load specimens into that. So we did the pilot studies, it's all demonstrated, we've done it in rain, in wind, in whatever, and it works. The difficulty now we're having is that we're waiting for aviation authority, because obviously you can't have remote aircraft flying all over. So once we get the aviation approval, civil aviation approval, we can effectively operationalize that. And for really remote settings, we can use it for two purposes. It's to pick up specimens. For now it can do about half a kg, but the second part is we may also be able to develop it to transport drugs. So if there are ARVs run out in a clinic, instead of putting it in a motorbike or in a bicycle, or a truck, we can use this remote aircraft. So the technology works, but we can't do it without civil aviation authority approval, and that approval has already been put through, so we're waiting for their feedback. So it's not the plane is ready to take off. We just need the authority to take off.
With the pilot.
With the pilot. Yeah.
With the pilot.
Yeah. Well, you can stand with a little remote. It's managed on. You'll have to stand with a remote control. You watch the movement on using GPS and on a computer. And no, certainly it's a very exciting project, I must say. If we can really get it off the ground, if you forgive the pun, then I think that it offers some very exciting opportunities for remote settings. So instead of putting technology out there, because remember, we can put technology in the remotest site. We can't get a technologist to the remotest site. That's the difficulty that we have. So I think, Chair, that between Dr. Ngijima and myself, we've answered it. I don't know whether Dev or Caterpillar wants to add anything.
I think we have said everything that we wanted to hear, except that you need to make that appointment with Ted.
Yes.
Because she's got a job now.
Okay.
I want to carry a pigeon. That works well, too. You don't need any authority from anybody.
No, sure. Actually,
good,
yeah,
well.
Yeah. Well, we actually, the one is called the Ujuba, which is a carrier pigeon, right? So,
what worries me is that I'm not sure whether it's necessarily involved in drug trafficking. Because there's some of those.
Right, okay. I'm not talking about those drugs for now, but we're talking drugs that do good, yeah.
Okay, you can switch off your.
Okay, thank you.
No, thank you very much, even for those answers. What impresses me most is, you know, it's very important, the dignity of people in leadership. And one of the things that you make people, you bring back their dignity is to call them by name.
Mm-hmm.
I'm very impressed with Kuraf.
Yeah,
you know, when he answered, he knows everybody.
Yeah.
Within this short term that he mentioned that it's who so-and-so who asked this question. I think I appreciate that. Because you make me feel that you really like me. I don't know how to say you love me, but when you mention me by name. Thank you. You know, I think leadership is about innovation. Because life is dynamic. So that's why Nade Hanada was asking that question.
Mm-hmm.
Because it was a good innovation, but we're not seeing it. So
yeah.
That probably that's one thing that the members seem to like this organization.
Yeah, yeah.
Because it seems that this is people who are innovative. And that's all about leadership. Remember that was the budget and their plan. They've got a plan and they've got a budget, but within their budget, they're still complaining that they're not getting enough money to do things. I think we, now that you say you've got these plans, you're going to carry them out, we're going to monitor you on what you have said you're going to do, irrespective of the little budget that we have. But we'll wait and see what's going to come out of the mediation that you're going through. I think members, let's agree that at a certain stage we need to find a way of getting a research, some research work, so that we could be objective and ask ourselves and ask those people to look at the pricing of the NHLS,
yes,
versus the other organizations that are the same. So let it be a research work so that we can decide on that, whether they are expensive, but we know that the reason why you were put up there was to make sure that some of the people that cannot afford expensive investigations, they'll be able to afford. And the other part of that investigation must be to see whether, since you were put up by law, have you done what was envisaged you want to, you have to do. Just trying to see what NHS has done. So we're going to do that. So thank you very much, members, all of you. So we'll meet those who are on HIV and AIDS committee, the new committee. We'll meet tomorrow at 9:00. So those who are not in it, then we'll meet next week on Wednesday. Thank you very much.
Chair, just before you close, our standing invitation, I think it'll be really useful to have the portfolio committee or representatives on the portfolio committee visit with us. Because until you've seen the stuff that's happening on the ground, you can't, in a presentation, you can never get across the extraordinary work that's happening within our labs, within our organization across the board, within the training faculties, etc. So I want to again extend an invitation, and I'm hoping that the board agrees with me, that committee members visit with us, or alternatively, the next presentation we do in NHLS. And we can spend the morning, the presentation in the afternoon, or we can visit a lab or look at the lab in the morning and in the afternoon do a presentation. So I'd leave that as a sunny invitation to you.
Okay, let's look at that. The only problem is that sometimes we've got our own budget, but it gets controlled.
Okay.
And that person might not see this as a
priority.
As a priority, but it's something that occurs. And we know that you don't have money.
No, other than that, yeah.
Yeah. But the only thing that we'll do, we won't bring her there because she won't come back. We won't bring her there. So when she sees the small plane, she'll stay there.
Yeah,
we won't bring
her.
We'll leave her behind. No, thank you very much. I think let's call it a day. Time is 12
thank
o'clock.
You.
We'll have an early lunch for today.
So, Chair, before we call it a day, do you, if then we were to go to the NHLS lab itself, you have a lab in Cape Town. Because Cape Town, at least, is around the bend.
Sure. We can certainly do that.
Going somewhere else in Spain.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, as I said, no, it's something that we're going to be considering, Sergey.
Okay.
We'll
okay.
tell you in due course whether we'll be able to come
again. Okay.
At least there is time that we can
get
that. Thank you very much, everybody.
Thank you.
Just under 2 billion.
Just under 2 billion.
Okay. And then in terms of the budget, the point being to be in the case of and was that one was appointed by the minister?
No, by the minister.
Okay. And then you didn't mention how much the KZN owes you.
1.2 billion.
Okay.
Jesus, wow.
And then when you spoke about the time that you obviously went into some trouble, when was that exactly?
Berlin. Yeah, it was the latter part of the year.
Okay.
It's all about the
okay. Okay.
And then so how did you get out of that one? No, the minister YouTube. Just Google
Hello.
If you could give vote,
if you can vote for me. Thank you. I don't want to say it. Oh, don't say that.